Blog Talk Radio.
Taking a swig of my drink right as I'm about to talk to you. I believe I have gotten rid of the parchedness. Is that a word? Parchedness? It sounds like it should be one if it's not. You could say I'm parched, but when you're describing the feeling of being parched, I think you can say parchedness. Whatever, bro. Got a lot of stuff to get to. Can't linger on that word enough here. Or can't linger on it too much, I should say. Big news day. So I got to talk a little bit about the executive orders from Donald Trump. I got to talk a little bit about the popularity of Congress. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs is all I have to say about that. Historic. The numbers are historic yet again. We have the DCCC, which their name always makes me laugh. Sometimes I say DCCC. It's the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. That's who they are. And they're up to their old tricks. And it's pretty embarrassing what they're doing and what they're going through. And I'm going to lay out some details on that front. We also have Donald Trump releasing his tax plan. Man, that is... That might be the story of the day, because when they didn't, like, so they released some details, they didn't get into too many specifics, but you have a really good idea of what they're going to do, and what we know so far is just, I mean, it's just pathetic. I can't even, like, it's so bad. I don't think these people give a shit if the country and the economy collapses, as long as their corporate buddies and them get to run out the back door with all the money. So we'll dive into that. We also have gigantic news about the FCC and net neutrality and the future of the internet. We're packed, wall to wall today. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. And we're going to do that with a little conversation here about President Trump's executive orders. Let's talk a little bit about executive orders. Remember how Republicans went nuts on Obama for signing a bunch of them? Well, let's get the facts here. This is from Fortune magazine. They say, Obama signed 276 during his 8 years in office, slightly less than Bush, 291, and Bill Clinton, 364. Did in their 2 terms, according to data compiled by the University of California, Santa Barbara. Executive orders were used relatively infrequently until Theodore Roosevelt ushered in a new era of executive action at the beginning of the 19th century, signing more than 1,000 while in office and establishing a template for his successors. Franklin D. Roosevelt, president during the Great Depression and World War II, signed more than 3,700 during his 12-plus years in office. Good googly-moogly. 3,700 is like, did you take time to eat? 3,700 is a lot. So FDR was not fucking around with these executive orders. But let me bring up the important fact yet again here. 276 Obama signed during his 8 years in office. So not only is it not a record high, it appears to be more of a record low that Obama signed. George W. Bush even signed more than him. But the Republicans went nuts. They called Obama a dictator, a tyrant, a king. In fact, listen to what Trump said. This is about Obama's executive orders and how against it he was. He said, the country wasn't based on executive orders. Right now, Obama goes around signing executive orders. He can't even get along with the Democrats, and he goes around signing all these executive orders. It's a basic disaster. You can't do it. So he says, the country wasn't based on executive orders, and quote, you can't do it. That's Donald Trump before he became president. Now that he's president, I think you can guess what's about to happen here. Donald Trump is about to sign a record number of executive orders in his first 100 days. So in his first 100 days, Trump signed 32 executive orders. That's the most of any president in their first 100 days since World War II. So it's Donald Trump who's broken the record for modern presidents. Trump is signing a record number of executive orders. Again, hypocrisy isn't even a strong enough word. Just so you understand the full extent of this hypocrisy, the Republicans, it was over 100 congressional Republicans that sued Obama over his executive orders. John Boehner led them. They brought a lawsuit against Obama over his executive orders. And they said, okay, understand, they're not objecting to the substance of the executive orders, which of course they do, but that's not the point of the lawsuit. Was, it's not just that we object to the substance, it's that we object in principle to executive orders. We don't agree with executive orders, we don't agree with executive actions, we think they're unconstitutional, we're going to sue you over them. And oh yeah, by the way, when our guy's in office, he's going to break the record, and we're not going to say dick about it. Now, all of a sudden, they're in favor of executive orders. So this is what we mean when we talk about, you know, why people despise politicians and oftentimes despise politics. And they check out of the system, and they say, you know what, I'm done here. And it's something you hear often where people go, they're all liars. Every single one of them, every last one of them are liars. Because they look at stories like this, and they go, I don't know how these people sleep at night. There's not a shred of consistency among all of them. You're going to, on principle, on supposed principle, say, oh, executive order is terrible, not in favor of them. And when your guy's in office and your guy breaks the record, mum's the word. Like, you can't even just give a little fucking shred of intellectual honesty and consistency and say, you know what, Don, pump your brakes. I'm not digging these executive orders. You want to get something done, do it the right way, go through Congress, do this, do that. No. Nope. Now, again, if they were to just object on the substance of the executive orders, that's a different question, one in which it's not necessarily hypocrisy. It's them saying, yeah, we're fine with executive orders. We just don't agree with the kind Obama's doing. But they don't just say that. They go further. And they say, no, we're against executive orders. I mean, we've shown the fucking clips of the different Republicans talking about, yeah, he's ruling by executive fiat. That's what he's doing. I mean, this is authoritarian. This is like a dictatorship. So, it's just pathetic to see this, man. And, by the way, it indeed is true that usually presidents turn to executive orders when their agenda stalls in Congress. And how sad is that, that his agenda is stalling? I mean, it's good for the country, don't get me wrong. But it's pathetic. He's ineffectual, is my point, because to this point, they haven't even been able to whip together the so-called Freedom Caucus, hilariously named, which are the Tea Partiers and the establishment Republicans, to get together to do certain things. So he's not really getting much through Congress at this point, so he's had to do everything as a unitary executive authority, which, again, ideologically is something that the people on the right say they're opposed to, until their guy gets in there, in which case all bets are off. We've seen this kind of hypocrisy before. Look at the issue of gay marriage. We're against it, we're against it, we're against it, and then you have a few Republican politicians who find out, oh my goodness, my son is gay or my daughter's gay. Dick Cheney did this. And there's like, oh yeah, gay, You know, what was it I said about gay marriage again? I said I was against it. I'm not necessarily against it. I mean, look, it's one of those things where you evolved. Rob Portman, I think, was another one. I'm against gay marriage. Wait, my kid's gay? I'm for gay marriage. It's just so sad. Disaster relief. This is probably the worst example of all of them. When there was Hurricane Sandy, both of them epic disasters, of course, and New York and New Jersey and the East Coast needed FEMA funds. Of course, we just got fucking ravaged by a hurricane. I lost power for over a week in that goddamn thing, and I was inland enough where we didn't get the brunt of it. I mean, fucking Staten Island, parts of Staten Island were wiped off the map. So FEMA funding was absolutely vital. What happened? A bunch of Republicans who are not from the Northeast were like, we're against it. We're not going to do disaster funding, even though you just got hit with a record-breaking hurricane. We're against the funds. We're going to vote against it. Then guess what? As soon as their states had a disaster, whether it be a wildfire or a flood or whatever, they're like, oh, why we need FEMA funding. Why isn't everybody lining up and giving us FEMA funding? Hypocrisy 101, man. I can't stand it. When they talk about welfare, yeah, we're against welfare. We don't want to give any handouts. It encourages a culture of moochers and parasites and bottom feeders, and you're going to do the bare minimum to get by. Anyway, can we now pass the corporate welfare bill? I'd love to give corporations welfare. That'd be wonderful. Can we please do that? Hypocrites! Hypocrites, hypocrites, hypocrites! You know, and unfortunately, it's all too common. We're in favor of small government, but I want to bail out Wall Street. Can we bail out Wall Street, please? It never fucking ends. So don't look for ideological consistency, or don't look for a consistent philosophy coming out of these crowds here, because you're simply not going to get it. You're just not going to get it, and it's a shame that our terrible media, corporate media, mainstream media, treats these guys like, honest actors here. They treat them like serious people who are acting on principle when all the evidence is there that they throw the principles out the window the second it's convenient. Okay. Now, let's continue. Talk a little bit about... Actually, let me take a little sip of my drink first. Ah, I just spilled some water on... one of the sheets here. Whatever. It'll have to stay wet. Make your own sex joke there. All right. Let's talk about how hated Congress is. I think you guys will like this one. So here's a fact for you. This is from The Economist. I saw this earlier in the week. Only 9% of Americans reported confidence in Congress in 2016. 9%. That's tied for a record low. Now, I might be missing it. Maybe somewhere deep in my mind, buried under a whole bunch of unimportant shit, is the number 7%. There's an outside chance that at one point they reached 7% favorability, but I could be wrong about that. I know they reached 9% at one point in the past. Now they're right back there. Well, this is for 2016. But 9% confidence in 2016. You do know we have what's supposed to be a democracy, right? I just want everybody to understand something. That can't happen in a democracy. That just can't happen. You want to know why? You pick the motherfuckers. So you pick them and go, these are the guys we want. And then when you're asked, hey, do you have confidence in them? A few months later, you're like, everybody's like, no. So how could that be? The answer is very simple. They're not representing you. If they did half the shit, a quarter of the shit that they promised on the campaign trail when they get into office, you would give them fucking glowing remarks. Glowing. It's not like this idea that, oh my God, the people are so goddamn hard to please. It's impossible to do it. No, it's that the politicians are so shitty at their jobs that they don't do anything of what they say they're going to do. And when you get a little taste of one that actually cares and at least fights for the things that he says he wants to do, like Bernie Sanders, people love him. 61% favorability rating Bernie Sanders has. Most popular politician in the country by a mile and a half. Donald Trump, 35%. Hillary Clinton, 35%. Bernie, 61%. Because he's authentic, he's principled, he's not bought, and he actually fights for the things he says he's going to fight for, which are things that you happen to agree with. So it's not that you're unreasonable and, you know, you're demanding too much. And these politicians, they keep bending over backwards to look out for their constituents, and the goddamn constituents are never happy. It's that you elect them, and they immediately stab you in the back. Because they're raising money from corporations and billionaires and PACs, and they're going to serve the special interests and the lobbyists and the corporations and the billionaires and the PACs, and they're not going to look out for you by any stretch of the imagination, and they haven't. And their voting record proves it. So, I mean, again, I just want you to remove the fact that this is us we're talking about here, and then try to view it objectively. So the way I like to view it is, imagine a state that the U.S. officially considers an enemy state, like Iran, for example, and these polls come out of Iran, where we find out, okay, so they just, elected Hassan Rouhani president. The president has limited powers, of course, because there's the grand Ayatollah, the supreme leader, and the religious authority that really controls it there. But, so you elect Hassan Rouhani, you elect a president in Iran, and then you do a poll a few months later, and only 9% of people like him. We would take that fact and run it and use it as all the evidence we need that we're dealing with a banana republic, a theocracy, a country that is unresponsive to the needs of the people. But in our context, this isn't even, like, the mainstream media won't even report on this. They just fucking sweep it under the rug. Oh, well, yeah, 9% of Americans have confidence in their fucking democratically elected body? Something seems wrong here, because something is wrong here. Because as we learned from the Princeton study a few years back, we function as an oligarchy. We don't function as a democracy. If we were a democracy, there's no way you'd get that 9% confidence rating. So it is true. It has been proven that the needs and wants of the top 1%, the richest people in the country and the corporations, they get what they want into law. You and I, the people, we don't get what we want into law. If you're middle class or you're poor, you don't get what you want enacted into law. There's no correlation between what you say in the opinion polls and what policies we end up getting. And the evidence of this is just endless. So, for example, 93% of the American people want a universal background check on gun purchases. We couldn't get that passed. 93% want it, and it's not unconstitutional, and we still weren't able to get it through Congress. Well, there's a problem. There's a fundamentally broken system now, isn't it? 80% want a minimum wage increase. The last time we got a minimum wage increase was under George fucking Bush. So we haven't gotten it in years and years and years. The minimum wage isn't even a living wage. You guys want that. You don't get it. The list goes on and on. I can go on all day. 60% want to legalize marijuana. So marijuana's not legalized at a federal level. And the states that have legalized it, there's about to be a crackdown from the federal government on those states. So your government is just totally unresponsive to you. Now, but thankfully, we live in a country where we have a free and independent media, and that free and independent media holds the politicians accountable and effectively fixes this, right? I mean, that's what happens. They can fix it because they call out the politicians, they're a watchdog of the people in power, and you can force them to drag them to the right position. So what percentage of the American people have confidence in TV news? 21%. 9% have confidence in Congress, 21% have confidence in TV news. You know what that means? That's also broken. So I've never seen better evidence than Noam Chomsky's manufacturing consent, which is simply the idea that corporate media ends up reflecting the will of the establishment and the elite and the corporatocracy and the oligarchy. So you have who is mainstream media? They're giant corporations. So there's a rigid hierarchy in that structure. You have people who own the corporation and, you know, the CEO and the executives, they hire the people who then hire the people who are going to be the on-air talent. Now, do you think they're going to pick people who are really interested in fundamental systemic reform to fix the country? No. Why? Because then that would cut into their profits and their bottom line. You're not going to hire somebody who's going to rail against your own fucking bottom line. They'd never do that. There's a basic incentive structure problem there. So what you do is you hire people who never rock the boat, will report on things that are meaningless drivel. They'll talk about Kanye West and Kim Kardashian and the horse race aspect of politics and what's this politician's hairstyle and, oh my God, what was that politician wearing? And only surface covering of serious issues if they discuss it at all, and then you move along. That's where you get Don Lemon from. That's where you get Wolf Blitzer from. You get it from this kind of a system, a corporate system, where it's multiple layers of filtration, so you end up hiring people who are going to reflect the values and the will of the elite class. And that's why only 21% of people have confidence in TV news. I mean, we live in a country where half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. Has there been any discussion of that on TV? Over 70% of the country lives paycheck to paycheck. Has there been anything about that? You go find how many segments discuss the fact that, what is it, the richest 8 people or 6 people have the same amount of wealth as the bottom 50% of the world? You have 6 or 8 people with the same as $3.6 billion? They didn't just work harder. That's not a meritocracy. That's a rigged system, a worldwide rigged economic system. But you don't, they don't, that's a real scandal. They don't talk about that like it's a real scandal. You know, bring it up briefly, move along. They had one of the guys from CNBC was arguing in favor of it. He said, I think that's awesome. I think that's wonderful that we have that. So, I mean, you want to talk about fake news. Real scandals, people dying because they don't have access to basic health care. Not discussed. What do you mean? It's just part of the system. It's just built into the system. It's baked in, so you got to suck it up and move along. Well, guess what? That's why 21% of people have confidence in TV news, because they know you suck at your job. You're terrible at your job. I mean, when Trump starts bombing the Syrian government, by the way, as the Syrian government fights al-Qaeda, so you're de facto aligning with al-Qaeda there, but as they do that, what happens? Fareed Zakaria, who's supposed to be one of the better people on TV, comes out, you know, this is a serious move, and I think he finally became president today. He wasn't serious. He's an unhinged buffoon, but he should bomb more places. That's the argument they're making. He wasn't serious until he started blowing shit up. This is crazy. We live in the Twilight Zone. Brian Williams talking about the beauty of our weapons. The beauty of our weapons. I can't get over how beautiful our weapons are. These are machines of death. And we're talking about a country that didn't wage an attack against us. So you're cheering on offensive war. I mean, how sick. What a corrupt, disgusting media culture we have in this country. And then, of course, they try to defund independent media, new media, hand in hand with that, as all this, as this disaster is happening throughout the country. They're trying to defund us. Jimmy Dore, Humanist Report, your favorite independent news outlet. They're trying to defund us. They cut a giant chunk off of our monetization on YouTube, and they're trying to shift the money back to corporations. And this is all you're going to get from them. Well, this is all you're going to get from big media. 21%. Confidence in TV news. We should poll my audience. How much confidence do you have in Kyle's reporting? Because guess what? Even if you disagree with me on certain issues, or even if I happen to fuck up from time to time, which does happen, you're going to go, yeah, I still have confidence in him because I know he's trying. He's not, he has a philosophy, sure. He has opinions, sure. But those come as advertised. And on top of that, yeah, we just give you news and information and facts, and then I give you my opinion. So, I mean, it's unbelievable how the major institutions in this country are just not trusted at all anymore. And it's because they shouldn't be trusted anymore. It's not a problem with you. It's a problem with them. They would swear up and down that's not the case. The politicians would swear up and down. If you get them in an honest moment, you get a little alcohol in them, think they're in a room full of friends, catch them in an honest moment, they'll say the rabble needs to fall in line. The problem is the people. You talk to the people in the media, in mainstream media, they say, oh, we do a great job, but they demand too much, these people. No, you guys suck at your job, and that's why there was a giant hole in the market when it comes to media. We're filling that hole. Sounds grossly sexual here. And so we get the numbers, but of course the revenue doesn't follow because we're rocking the boat too much. So let me give you one more fact here to show you just how far we've fallen. In the 1960s, 77% of Americans trusted the government. By the way, pre-money in politics. That was right. I mean, 1960s, we're talking Civil Rights Movement, Voting Rights Act. I mean, that was a time when the government was actually responsive. Under Lyndon Johnson, the government was responsive and said, yeah, we're going to do Civil Rights Act, we're going to do the Voting Rights Act. And at the time, that was political suicide because there were conservative Democrats in the South, and Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and famously said, we're going to lose the South for a generation, meaning the Democratic Party. But he signed it anyway because it was the right thing to do. So Lyndon Johnson signs that. We have the Civil Rights Movement. We have the government actually looking out, the federal government looking out for the rights of black people in the South. They had to escort a little black girl to what was a white school, and there were people with guns protecting her. This was American history, but this was the government feeling the pressure from the people, responding to the pressure, which, by the way, again, was more possible because they didn't have money infecting the political system. That downfall really started in the late 1970s, early 1980s, with various Supreme Court decisions, which made it so that money equals free speech, culminating with McCutcheon and Citizens United much later on, which really shot a dead horse. But now you have corporations run the government completely. Back then, they were at least somewhat responsive, which is why 77% of Americans in the 60s trusted the government. Today, 9%. We need fundamental systemic reform. That goes for the media, that goes for our government, and the only way to do it is for us to fight from the bottom up, because there's going to be no change coming from the top down, which is why you should, you know, if you can, it would mean the world if you support whatever independent, you know, media outlets you like, visit their Patreon, help them out, just give them a little bit per month, myself, whoever else you like, Humanist Report, Benjamin Dixon Show, David Pakman, Jimmy Dore, whoever, and on top of that, support whatever movement or whatever, you know, branch of the movement you're most comfortable supporting when it comes to taking back our government, whether it be Democratic Socialists or the Green Party or Our Revolution or Justice Democrats, which is our direct attempt to have the Bernie wing take over the Democratic Party. I mean, we're running candidates. We're doing this thing. We have to do the reform from the bottom up. Nobody's coming to rescue us. We have to rescue ourselves. So let's get fighting and let's do it, because when you have only 9% of Americans having confidence in Congress and 21% having confidence in TV news, guess what? That's grounds for some kind of populist takeover. And the question is, will it be populist right or will it be populist left? As of right now, it's faux populist right. So the door was open, they walked through it, but it was all fake populism because Trump appointed Goldman Sachs everywhere and he's doing the bidding of the neocons and the establishment. So the door is still open for either populist right or populist left. It's time for the populist left to take over the Democratic Party and walk through. Okay. Do. All right, now... let me take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to get into the DCCC, and what they're doing, and then we're going to get into Donald Trump and his proposed tax plan. So don't miss it, especially the tax plan segment. That is huge. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
No! with the left.
All right, y'all, we're back. All right, jump right back into it here. The DCCC, which is the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, launched what they're calling University, and here's how NBC News is referring to it. Yeah, that's embarrassing. It's an American Idol campaign school. They're trying to find the future Democratic staffers. But let me read you a portion from the middle of the piece so you can see what this is really about here. They say, class was in session for the first time Wednesday evening at a union hall in Austin, Texas. Gold and other veteran operatives, Democratic operatives, walked about 40 students through a three-hour 101-level course, introducing them to the nitty-gritty of campaign management. Gold taught a course on Rolodex fundraising, the art of mining a candidate's social network for potential donors, and he led another one on how to get the most bang for the buck from campaign consultants who do much of the behind-the-scenes work on congressional campaigns. Two officials with the Texas Democratic Party offered lessons on how to write and maintain a campaign budget and stay within the law while doing it, and students heard from local congressmen and other DCCC officials. Okay, yeah. They can't help themselves, man. They're an embarrassment. The Democratic Party is an embarrassment. The corporate Democrats are so smug, and they're so convinced they got it on lock, and they're just a shell of human beings. You're putting the cart before the horse, you idiots! We're going to have a school that's like an American Idol school, and we're going to find the future Democratic stars and the staffers, and it's going to be great. And then what do? The first day, they jump right into, okay, so let me tell you how you guys can search for donors and get money. Okay, look, don't get me wrong. The way the system functions right now, if you want to be involved politically, unfortunately, you have to raise money. I wish it wasn't the case. I wish we had public financing of elections, clean elections. We do not have that right now. So you have to raise money from somewhere. The question is from where? The corporate Democrats have answered that question with, we're going to go to corporations, we're going to go to billionaires, we're going to use PACs. So they went right back to the method and the strategy that was the problem to begin with, that gave us Donald Trump, that gave us the Democratic Party wiped out at every single level. Now, Justice Democrats, on the other hand, we've decided we're going to go right to the people. We don't allow corporate money, PAC money. We don't want billionaire money. We want money from regular people to try to fund a grassroots movement to take over, then get money out of politics and push for stuff like single payer, making the minimum wage a living wage, free college, ending these unnecessary offensive nation-building wars, ending the drug war, legalizing marijuana. I mean, we want to push for the things that the American people want and that progressives have been screaming about for ages now, and the Democratic Party has just ignored them. But they start this goofy-ass American Idol-like search to find new stars day one. All right, let's jump right into money. How do we raise from people, and how do we go through their social media accounts and look for people? And then also, there was a very, misleading, sly thing that they put in here, where they say they're going to teach lessons on how to write and maintain a campaign budget. So you say, okay, that seems normal, right? But they say, and stay within the law while doing it. That's a weird line to put, right? Why would you put that? Well, stay within the law. What are you talking about? If you're doing a budget, what? No, because the DCCC and corporate Democratic hacks, they have to skirt the few remaining campaign laws. So they want to take money from corporations. They want to take money from billionaires. They want to raise from PACs. But, you know, there's still some rules left. So when they say stay within the law, what they're talking about is how to raise more money than you're allowed to raise through various avenues and still somehow legally get it to your candidate and get it to doing what you want it to do. This is like, let me give you an example of this. This is like Hillary Clinton You're technically by law, your campaign is not allowed to coordinate with a super PAC. Now, because they say a super PAC is independent expenditures. So as long as there's no coordination between campaign and super PAC, the super PAC can, spend unlimited amounts of money. There are rules for how much a campaign can spend. A super PAC, unlimited. But guess what? There's workarounds, and of course there's communication between the campaign and the super PAC, and they kind of direct the direction the super PAC is going to go in, and they help them with ads, which is why oftentimes you see these ads, like Mitch McConnell released that ad everybody laughed at recently, where it's just him, there's no audio, and it's just him, like, smiling on his desk, fucking, you know, throwing a ball outside or some shit with somebody, and then what happens is his PAC takes that, and then they add the audio. And they go, whoa, there was no coordination. What? We just happened to release a video that has Mitch McConnell saying nothing, and the PAC happened to find it and then use it. So there's always coordination. This is what they're referring to. How do you skirt the few remaining campaign finance laws? So the Democratic Party, after being wiped out largely because they took all this corporate money and they're viewed as sellouts, they're teaching classes to find the next Democratic stars, and on day one they go, let me show you guys how to skirt the remaining campaign finance laws. That's the problem. That's the problem. You're not principled. The fucking DNC, they had a vote after Hillary had already lost, after the Democrats got wiped out from coast to coast at every level of government, and they voted to what? Keep taking corporate money to the DNC. And then they have the nerve to say, and we saw headlines, we covered the articles. Tom Perez, the new DNC head, DNC trying to court millennials and big money donors. They're mutually exclusive, you legendary dipshits. Pick one or the other. You want the millennials or you want the big money donors? We've decided who we want over at Justice Democrats. We want millennials. We want people. We want real people, regular people, who just want to make the country a better place and just want to make it so that the U.S. is not the only modern nation that doesn't have single-payer health care. We want to make it so people have a living wage. So if you work full-time, you make enough money to survive. I mean, they've learned nothing. And they've doubled down on the wrong strategy. And they've exposed themselves as perennially corrupt. They're just sellouts. All they do is represent corporate America. Can you imagine, man? I mean, what kind of... How sad. They're a house of cards. You know, they're going to reach out. All right, guys, let's, time for us to do a movement. Can you donate? People are going to be like, fuck yourself. Because you're also taking money from Wall Street, and you're also taking money from big corporations and billionaires. You think millennials, young leftists who want to be involved, they're going to go to an established institution that is just packed with old money, corporate money, big donor money, and they think that this institution is what, going to hold on to their principles? I mean, this is why the corporate Democrats don't push for Medicare for All. This is why they don't push for free college. Because they're owned, they're bought and owned by corporate America. So, come on, man, who are you kidding? And they don't, like, they think that they could just put lipstick on a pig and by saying things like, this is an American Idol-like competition, that millennials would be like, oh, I liked American Idol. Oh, I guess I should partake in this. I mean, this is like, all right, people, what I want you to do is Pokemon go to the polls. Like Hillary said when she was running. No, people went, no, your millennial outreach is to basically fucking pander to us and be condescending and treat us like brainless idiots who follow trends without caring about real issues. Like we're sitting there, the next person who mentions Tamagotchis or yo-yos certainly has my vote. No, we care about fucking student loan debt because a lot of millennials are up to their eyeballs in debt that they can't get out of because of our shitty system that put them in the hole before they get out in the real world. They care about medical bills. They care about creating an economy that looks out for regular people, working people. I mean, what a sick, they'll never fucking learn. We got to make them learn. JusticeDemocrats.com, guys. I can't take this anymore. I mean, you think I want to come out here on a daily basis and have to shit on the Democrats like this? I don't, but what else am I supposed to do? Pretend this is good? The American Idol, a great idea. You're going to get so many people that help you with that. And by the way, keep taking corporate money and billionaire money, and everything will be great. And go back on everything that's supposed to be progressive value. Go back on Medicare for All. Go back on making the minimum wage a living wage. Go back on being against wars. Yeah, everything's great. No, you got to fucking care about the issues. Stop being corrupt and rebuild from the ground up, and you'll have – the people are waiting. They're waiting for a real thing to happen. And that's what we're here to do. JusticeDemocrats.com, guys. Go sign your name in support of the movement. We're running candidates. It's really happening. There's training and vetting going on right now. So sign your name in support of the movement, and let's keep going here, because this stuff drives me crazy. I mean, I can't even sufficiently explain, even though I've just been talking about it for fucking however long already in this segment. I can never sufficiently put into words how angry this makes me. Because they were given, the corporate Democrats were given all the evidence in the world that they're the fucking problem. And their answer is to double down on that strategy, and in many instances get even worse. You know, we thought Hillary Clinton was bad. You got so many Democrats now view, corporate Democrats now view, Joe Manchin is our only hope. So in other words, Democrats who are just Republicans, who do everything Donald Trump wants, don't stand for any progressive or democratic values, liberal values. And, yeah, just concede. So why even fucking bother to say you're an opposition party? Just go fucking join them. We'll be here fighting for the real revolution, which is a populist left grassroots uprising. Okay. Next. Donald Trump proposed his tax plan yesterday, and the best way to describe it is the Bush tax cuts on steroids. So I'm going to get into all the specifics here, and you're going to see why this is such a colossally disastrous tax plan. So this is journalist Zach Carter, and he lays it out for us. He says, President Donald Trump's top economic advisors on Wednesday proposed trillions of dollars in tax cuts for millionaires under a plan billed as the biggest tax reform in over 30 years. All right, let me pause real quick. When he says President Donald Trump's top economic advisors, you know who he's referring to, who rolled out this plan and who was responsible for crafting this plan? Steve Mnuchin and Gary Cohn. You know who they are? Goldman Sachs lackeys. Literally. Mnuchin was with them for about 17 years. He also ran One West Bank, which was responsible for foreclosing on countless numbers of senior citizens. And you have Gary Cohn, who was the president of Goldman Sachs. The president of Goldman Sachs. So these are two top economic advisors from a criminal organization, literally. Remember, fraud was the business model at Goldman Sachs. They took these toxic subprime mortgage packages that they knew were dog shit. They paid for a fake AAA rating from the ratings agencies. It's pure corruption. This was garbage. But they paid for the rating agencies to say, no, it's the best investment you can make. It's AAA. They sold them to unsuspecting clients, telling them they're going to get rich. Then they turned around and bet on those same packages to fail. That is fraud. These are criminals. They should be in jail. You go rob a liquor store, you get caught with some marijuana, you get years behind bars. These guys and their greed and recklessness crashed the fucking economy, and now they run it. They run our tax policy. It's unbelievable. We're run by a criminal gang. Okay, let me continue. He says, in a one-page statement of principles for tax reform provided to reporters, the administration offered few specifics. They did insist on three major perks for the wealthy, however, reducing the tax rate on stocks, bonds, and real estate investments, eliminating inheritance taxes, wow, for millionaire heirs and heiresses, and bringing down the tax rate on the largest corporations to less than half of what it is now. The inheritance tax, disparaged by conservatives as a death tax, only applies to millionaires. Magnates must will at least $5.45 million to their heirs, $10.9 million for couples, to qualify for the tax. Heirs and heiresses pay an average rate of 16.6% on these inheritances. According to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, generating about $275 billion for the government over 10 years. Okay, let me pause there. As Bill Maher likes to say, you have to tax people in a society. In order to have a functioning civil society, you need to get money from somewhere. You need to get funds from somewhere. Who better to tax than rich, dead people? The real name of this tax is the estate tax. But the Republicans, with their shitty framing, which actually works, unfortunately, on propaganda grounds, they say, no, it's the death tax. So middle-class people, poor people, regular people go, well, I'm going to die one day. I'm against that tax. I want to pass my money off to my kids. No, you're going to be able to. In fact, even if you make $4.5 million, you're not hit by this tax at all. It only applies to people with fucking estates. It's not even just the top 1%. It's the top 0.02%, I think it is. Guys, are you kidding me? So this is a tax on estates, the richest people in the country, and it just takes some of the money that they would hand off to their shitty, bratty, Paris Hilton-like son or daughter, and you're going to have the Republicans, who claim they believe in pull yourself up by your bootstraps, they're arguing for unlimited inheritance, where you can have a spoiled brat who's done nothing, who's rich, simply because they're a member of the Good Sperm Club. Daddy was an entrepreneur who made a lot of money, and I'm just going to get it, and we're going to pass on the wealth through generations and create, you know, a giant swath of Paris Hiltons. What happened? I thought you said, well, money is pure incentive. No, that's only for poor people when it comes to them getting welfare. When it comes to rich people, give them the money, give them the money, give them the money. And all we're talking about is a little tax on people who have about $5 million or more. All this is a heist, where you're robbing from the middle class and giving to the rich. I just told you. And this is $275 billion the government loses. You know who's going to make up for that? The middle class and the poor. So they shift the tax burden from rich, dead people to middle class people and poor people. They're not looking out for you. They claim like, oh, we're going to cut taxes for those people. But you're not. That's not cutting taxes for them. That's cutting taxes for the rich. Okay, let me give you more. Trump would also repeal the 3.8% tax on stocks, bonds, and real estate investments that Obamacare imposed on individuals making at least $200,000 a year. So again, over 200 for you, not for middle class and poor. A full 90% of this tax break would accrue to households making at least $700,000 a year, which would receive an average tax cut of $25,000 a year, according to the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center. Slashing the corporate tax rate from 35% to 15% would cost the federal government $2.4 trillion, according to the Tax Policy Center. Okay, let me pause again. Guys, when they say they're deficit hawks, they're liars. They're lying to you. We care that these goddamn Democrats always driving up the deficit. Hold on now. Obama inherited a $1.4 trillion deficit. He cut it to about $600 billion. Now, you might say, hey, that's not enough, but he cut the deficit. Here we're talking about this would cost the federal government $2.4 trillion to cut the corporate tax rate from 35% to 15%. And by the way, corporations are already paying a historic low percentage of the tax pie. That's a weird way of framing it. Corporations are already paying a historic low percentage of the tax burden. And they want to cut it even more. Now, by the way, when they say it's a 35% tax rate on corporations, that's not true. That's what's called the nominal rate. The nominal rate is just what it is on paper. After you account for all the loopholes and all the deductions and all the fuckery that corporations get because they have a team of lawyers working around the clock to find a way to weasel out of paying their taxes, the effective tax rate for U.S. corporations is what? 12%. So on paper, it's 35%, so all these bobblehead idiots who are doing propaganda go out there and say, oh, my God, highest corporate tax rate in the world, 35%, oh, my God, these poor corporations, pity the oppressed corporations. They say that, but the reality is they're really paying the effective tax rate is 12% for corporations, which is one of the lowest in the modern world. Now, what Trump wants to do, oh, cut it from 35% to 15%, and then they say to you, yeah, but we're going to eliminate loopholes and deductions. Oldest trick in the book. You say you're going to do that and you don't do it, so you just lower the tax rate and still keep the deductions, or you put them in initially and then later on you slip into various bills that have nothing to do with it, like a farm bill or something, bringing back those deductions and loopholes again like that. That's what they do with Dodd-Frank. We passed historic Wall Street reform, and then they would jam in like a farm bill later on. Anyway, we're going to repeal this regulation on Wall Street and that regulation on Wall Street, and you dismantle the bill piece by piece. So it is a ruse. It is a ruse to do the bidding of the corporations. You've been had, you've been took, you've been bamboozled. All right, let me give you more. The Trump team also said they want to simplify the number of tax brackets from 7 to 3, reducing the top rate from 39.6 to 35%. Trump's team did not specify what income levels would apply to the new brackets, but fewer tax brackets typically results in lower taxes on upper income individuals. They further said they would protect deductions for mortgage interest, a perk that disproportionately benefits the wealthy, shocker, delivering larger benefits to people who buy bigger houses. And Trump said he would double the standard deduction, which would exclude more household income from taxation. Okay, so now this is the part of the bill where, and I haven't seen a single media outlet point this out, which is maddening because it's literally what it is. Trump wants to go directly back to the Bush tax cuts when it comes to the marginal rate. So we're talking about a historic gutting of the corporate tax rate when the corporations are already paying a historic, low amount of the tax burden in the country. We're talking about eliminating the estate tax, which is just a giant giveaway to the wealthy. And on top of all that, we're talking about going directly back to Bush's top tax rate, which is just a giant tax cut for the top 1%. So every level of this plan is geared towards the rich doing class warfare on the middle class and the poor and wrecking the budget in the process. And again, not a single outlet I've seen has described this accurately as the Bush tax cuts on steroids. That's exactly what he's proposing here. So, guys, I don't know if you know this. We have the historical evidence as to what happens when you do this. So remember, the two major things that lead to crashes: giant tax cuts for the rich, and what? Deregulation. What has Donald Trump been doing? Executive order after executive order doing deregulation, and he's doing now giant tax cuts for the rich. Guess what? That led to the Great Depression. Later on under Reagan, when he did the same philosophy, when he got out of office, we had a giant recession. And then when you had under Glass-Steagall under Bill Clinton, and then further deregulation under George W. Bush, tax cuts for the rich married with deregulation, we had the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. Every time throughout history you implement far-right economics, which is deregulation and tax cuts for the rich, you have boom-bust cycles. Everything takes off. Oh, my God, the market's doing so great. The good times are going to last forever. And everything crashes, and it fucking burns. We're going to go through the same goddamn thing now because they don't care about the lessons of history, because all they care about is letting their corporate donor buddies run out the back door with all the money. That's all this is about. Give the rich more money. Let them get away with whatever they want to get away with because they own the White House. Goldman Sachs controls our economic policy, and everybody else suffers in the meantime. This is a cruel joke is what it is. It's not even a question. We already know. The facts are there. The data's there. The historical evidence is there. We're going to have another gigantic crash. They're just putting it, they're just making it inevitable and making it happen sooner. So this can't possibly be. Either he's got the dumbest people in the world in his administration that don't recognize these historical facts, or they know, but they just don't care because, hey, I just care about me and my buddies getting more money and getting rich. So that's what this is, the Bush tax cuts on steroids. It's a worst-case scenario bill. We're talking about a worst-case scenario tax bill. And if I'm the Democrats, I scream hell no, and I shout it from the rooftops that this is the Bush tax cuts on steroids, and it's going to lead to another gigantic recession, if not a depression. And I call it out in speeches on the Senate floor, in speeches in the House of Representatives. I call it out in rallies around the country. I call it out every time I'm on – cable news, and even if I'm discussing an issue that's not related, I call it out and I say it over and over, and I let everybody know this Republican Party is lying to you. They say, oh, yeah, we're going to cut taxes for the middle class and the poor. No, you're not. This whole thing is geared towards cutting taxes for the rich. So they're liars, and you have to call them liars, and you have to give the facts, and you have to win in the realm of framing. I hope you can hold it off in the realm of policy. I would do anything and everything to hold this off. But definitely win in the realm of framing so that you get a landslide progressive victory in the next election, and we can prevent this horrific damage and start moving in the right direction. Okay. All right, another really important story. We're on the verge of the worst-case scenario happening to the internet right now, and that's not an exaggeration. This is from Reuters. FCC chairman to propose reversing net neutrality rules. The head of the U.S. Federal Communications Commission on Wednesday proposed overturning the landmark 2015 Obama-era net neutrality rules that prohibit broadband providers from giving or selling access to certain internet service over others. A plan to reverse the rules, approved by the FCC under Democratic President Barack Obama, is expected to set off a fight over the future of the internet regulation. Ajit Pai, who was named chair of the FCC by President Donald Trump in January, said in a speech in Washington he was aiming to reverse rules that gave the government greater regulatory powers over internet service providers, arguing they cost jobs, and depressed investment. Quote, do we want the government to control the internet, or do we want to embrace the light touch approach in place since 1996 until revised in 2015? He asked. Okay, let me be really clear about this. He's lying. That's a lie. What he's doing is he's lying to you right there, brazenly lying. So what were the FCC rules implemented under Obama? The rules were to keep the internet exactly as it is and as it was. The internet is regulated as a public utility, which means what? You can't have internet service providers fucking with your internet. So in other words, let's say your internet service provider is Verizon, and you want to go to a site that hasn't paid Verizon what Verizon wants them to pay. Well, what Ajit Pai wants and what the Republicans want, they want the internet service providers to be able to slow down access to websites that don't pay them their bribes. So in other words, the only things you would have access to at normal speed are the various websites and companies that have made a deal with Verizon and they're part of the Verizon package deal. And, you know, same with the others, you know, whatever they may be, Comcast, let's say. Who do they have a deal with? Okay, those are the sites where you'll go to. It'll be normal speed, but they'll slow it down for anybody who doesn't pay them their bribes. So what the internet service providers wanted to do was give themselves more control of the internet and make it not free and not open. They want to micromanage your internet connection and slow down speeds to certain sites. They misleadingly say, no, we're just creating a fast lane for the sites that have partner deals with us. But by definition, you're creating a slower lane if you do that. So no, keep everything the same fucking speed. What are you talking about? Really? And what's going to happen? You're going to favor giant corporations who can afford to pay the bribe, and all the small businesses and smaller sites that can't afford to pay their fucking bribe to the internet service provider, they're going to get slower access, and they're going to be cut out of the market. And this is continuing the corporatocracy and the takeover of our government by corporations and now of our internet by it. See, right now, and what it's been like to this point is, the FCC is regulated as a public utility, which means it's free and open, and the internet service providers can't slow down your speed to any sites. Ajit Pai and the Republicans want to change that, and they want the internet service providers to have all the control they want. This is the death of the internet. If they succeed with this, your internet is no longer free and open. It's just not. And by the way, what's to say that you won't have the government put pressure on the few internet service providers to also say, hey, not only should you slow down access to the sites that that you don't have a deal with you financially, but maybe you also just kind of shut out everything that we view as fake news. So anything that questions the government too strongly, questions corporations that are in control too strongly, cut off access to them or slow them down to oblivion. So no, but here's the point. They can't win on the merits of this argument. They know they can't because they want to make the internet not free and open. They don't want to have equal access to whatever website you want to go to. They can't win by saying that. They can't win by saying, let's let the internet service providers do whatever they want and shut out access to wherever they want. So what do? They lie, and they pretend like they're on the right side of the argument, and they pretend like Obama wanted it to be the case that, you know, the internet's not free and open, and that the FCC rules made the internet not free and open. No, the FCC rules solidified the way the internet already worked. So he's fucking lying to you. Now, you already know what the Republicans are capable of. We covered the story. President Trump signed a bill that had a 6% favorability rating. Only 6% of Americans agreed with the bill that he signed about the internet. You remember what that was about? It now allows your internet service provider to sell your private information to third parties for advertising purposes and things of that nature. So, in other words, when you go on to certain websites and you give them your information, it used to be the case that it is illegal for them to take your information, whatever it may be, medical history, social security number, all that stuff. No, they can't sell it to somebody else unless they get your approval first. They need your consent. So if you put your information into a certain website, hey, look, I know it feels weird to do it, but at least you're protected. That's not sold anywhere else. They don't give it to anybody else. The Republicans and Donald Trump said, yeah, we disagree. We're going to sign a bill that allows companies that have your information to sell it to third parties so that they can try to, you know, get your money too. They could advertise you and things like that. 6% of the American people agreed with it. The Republicans passed it. Donald Trump signed it. You think they won't? And the FCC, that doesn't even need to go through Congress. They could just change it. They could just say, yeah, we're just going to change it. There's no upside to this. This is horrific. The only slight silver lining is the Republicans are going to get wiped out. If they go down this road, they are with the 6% fucking internet thing already. And if they do this, oh, are you kidding me? No way. Even Trump's fucking alt-right fanboys, even they'll be like, nope. Nope, we see what you did. That affects us, you know. Nope. Sorry, you're donezo. So, I don't think Trump is now surrounded by the establishment, and all he cares about is making the establishment happy and making corporate media happy. What made the corporate media happy? When he bombed Syria. So you're going to get more war from Trump, and you're going to get more actions like this because this makes everybody around him go, oh, yes, you're such a great president. You're the best president ever. Meanwhile, now everybody in the country is going, fuck you. We fucking hate you, you sellout to the establishment. That's what happens when you're vacuous and vapid. You have an empty head. You don't have any real core philosophy or ideology. And you just go, oh, where do I get approval from next? Oh, okay, the establishment and the neocons. That's where you are now. That's who he's surrounded by now. So that's why he's totally open to stuff like this. And this would be an epic disaster for everybody, because this means the internet is no longer free and open. Okay, next. We have some rare good news here. Actually, that's not true. This actually flipped, so let me restart that. President Donald Sellout Trump was flirting with doing something that's actually very positive the other day, but then there was a new development in the story that I'm going to give you at the end here. So the White House was weighing an executive order to withdraw from NAFTA. Ooh. They say the Trump administration is weighing an executive order on withdrawing from the North American Free Trade Agreement. According to a source familiar with the plans, the measure is in draft form and has been submitted to the White House staff secretary for the final stages of review, the source said. The order could be unveiled later this week or made early next week, and changes could be made during the review process. If the administration follows through with the order, it could signal its intent to pull out of the major trade pact with Canada and Mexico. President Trump, get this, guys, does not need an executive order to withdraw from the trade agreement. Under NAFTA, any parties are allowed to leave 6 months after providing written notice to the other countries. But an order declaring that intent could be used as leverage by the Trump administration against Canada and Mexico to broker better trade terms, short of leaving the deal entirely. The development comes after Trump took aggressive action against Canada on trade this week by slapping a new tariff on softwood lumber imports and threatening to retaliate against Canadian taxes on U.S. dairy exports. Okay, so first things first, do I agree with that tariff on Canadian softwood lumber imports? Yes, I do. I'm generally in favor of tariffs. Why? Because the whole idea behind tariffs, it's very simple. It makes it so that you incentivize buying American goods over foreign goods. And that has to do with, I want more jobs in America. I want my fellow Americans to be prosperous and make their way into the middle class. So I want you to get jobs. I, you know, prioritize your jobs over jobs in Bangladesh. No offense to people in Bangladesh. No offense to people everywhere else in the world. But this is our country, and we're falling apart at the seams, and we should take care of our own business before we go and do anything else with somebody else. So I like tariffs. Generally speaking, you got to do them intelligently. They got to be on the right issues. But yes, if you tax foreign goods that come into the country, you do a tariff on them to make them more expensive than comparable American goods, then the American good is less expensive and you incentivize more people to go buy the American good, which means you hire more Americans, which means it's overall good for America. So this is an issue. It's called protectionism. This is something that back in the day, everybody was for it. Now we're at a place where free trade, as it's called, which is really outsourcing, is the norm, and that's only because corporations have bought our government. If corporations didn't buy our government, so many more people would be protectionist. In fact, the American people are still pretty strongly protectionist, but the oligarchy has disagreed, so they've mostly gotten rid of the tariffs and opened up trade borders, and so many Americans have lost jobs as a result. So that's a good thing. Now, to the substance of the rest of this here. Guess what? This story comes out like 3 or 4 hours later. The next story comes out. Trump's like, yeah, no, we're not getting out of NAFTA. Of course you're not getting out of NAFTA. No shit, you're not getting out of NAFTA. You want to know why? Because Donald Trump has been corrupted by the establishment. That's why. It's the same thing. He's, oh, we're not going to go into Syria. Anyway, can we go bomb Syria now? We're not going to escalate. We're going to rebuild our country here at home. We're not going to do overseas nation building. Anyway, let's go drop the largest non-nuclear weapon we have on Afghanistan. Let's increase drone strikes by 432%. Let's escalate in Syria. Let's escalate in Iraq. There's all the, no, we're going to get out. Anyway, let's go in more. So, you know, whatever he said on the campaign trail, that the few good things he sprinkled in, forget it. He's an empty vessel. He contradicted himself on every policy, and now that he's in office, he's just going to respond to the people who are in his circle. Who's in his circle? The establishment, Goldman Sachs guys out the wazoo, at least four of them. So you have the economic establishment is in there, and the foreign policy establishment. His foreign policy team is all neocon. And they're doing all the neocon policies, escalating with North Korea for no goddamn reason, escalating with Iran. So he said on the campaign trail, NAFTA, terrible, sad, losing jobs in the Rust Belt. I'm going to bring him back. Trump is going to bring him back. We're going to do an infrastructure deal. What happened, big guy? You're listening to the establishment, and you're bought by the establishment. So, by the way, I originally planned this segment. I was going to come out here and say, hey, Trump's considering it. Trump, do it. If you do it, I'll give you credit. If you pull out an NAFTA, I'm going to give you credit. You might have some hack Democrats, loyalists, who say, now that Trump pulled out of NAFTA, I am for NAFTA, and I would go after them ruthlessly. But guess what? You're not going to pull out of NAFTA. It's been reported you're not pulling out of NAFTA, and now you're the sellout, and you're the bitch to the establishment, and we're going to call you out for what you are. So, by the way, what are the effects of NAFTA? $181 billion U.S. trade deficit with Mexico and Canada. The loss of 1 million net U.S. jobs, growing income inequality, and displacement of more than 1 million Mexican farmers. So it's a disaster for everybody except the ruling class, except the corporatists, except the elitists. So who are you representing, Don? The ruling class, the corporatists, the elitists. All right, next. Senators Patty Murray and Bernie Sanders introduced a pretty good bill the other day. It's a $15 an hour minimum wage bill. So let me go ahead and give you some facts about it here. There are 23 senators who are already backing it, including corporate Democrat extraordinaire Chuck Schumer, shocking. Keith Ellison and Bobby Scott are proposing a similar bill in the House, and the wage would go from $7.25 to $9.25 in 2017. Then it would jump to $12 in 2020, and then it would jump to $15 in 2024. So they phase it in over time, and they're doing it in tandem with median wage growth. And it would raise the pay, get this is amazing, it would raise the pay of 41.5 million workers. So is this a positive thing? Yeah, I'd say so. And here's the main point, and here's what I'm afraid of. In fact, I'm almost convinced it's going to happen. But the Democrats aren't going to fight. So you're going to have all the press releases and stuff from the national Democrats, the corporate Democrats. It's all Russia. Russia, 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 Russia. And that's the reason why, one of the main reasons why, the Democratic Party right now, only 28% of the American people say they're in touch with the common man. 32% say the Republican Party is in touch with the common man. So Republicans are beating Democrats when it comes to who's in touch with the common man. I mean, that's like a legendary collapse among the Democrats, and it just shows how ineffectual they are and how lost they are. 38% of Americans say Donald Trump is in touch with the common man. The billionaire, born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Joke of a human being. He's more in touch with the common man than the Democratic Party. It's unreal. Why? Because the National Democrats, everything you hear, like all the talk on cable news and stuff, Russia, 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 Russia. And I've argued from day one, bad idea, because number one, what you're pointing out is not true, this idea that, oh, he's Putin's puppet or something. But number two, you're distracting from real issues. Like, for example, Donald Trump signed a bill that only 6% of the American people agree with. It allows, certain internet providers or internet providers in general to sell your personal information to third parties, sell it so they make profit off of it, so that those parties can then advertise to you and get in your business. It used to be the case that they weren't legally allowed to sell your information. Now they can. Only 6% of Americans supported that. The Republicans supported it. The Democrats had nothing to say about it. They all voted against it, but they didn't do a campaign where they all go out and discuss it endlessly and talk about Trump and the Republicans just passed something that only 6% of you agree with. That's mental. That's an authoritarian regime. That's what that is. They're dictators. They don't care about the will of the people. They did the horrific policy, and you just let it, yeah, okay, it went by, whatever. How do you not fight on that? How do you not fight on a universal background check bill when 93% of Americans agree? You lose, and then you go home with your tail between your legs and come out the next day and talk about Russia? The fuck is wrong with you? They keep proposing horrific bills for health care. Oh, yeah, let's get rid of pre-existing conditions. Let's gut Medicaid by $880 billion. Let's make 53 million people uninsured. The Democrats can't come out and say, you guys are idiots, let's do Medicare for all. Every other modern nation has one version or another of single payer. We need to do that. Let's cover everybody. They can't do it. They can't do it because they don't really believe in those things. Well, here you have an instance where Democrats are proposing $15 an hour, again, led by Bernie Sanders, in the Senate, Keith Ellison in the House, and the Democrats are like, they're just starting to get it, like, oh, I guess maybe if we kind of act somewhat progressive, people will like us. So a bunch of them sign on, but now watch, they're going to not do the second part of it, which is, fucking fight for it, you idiots! What are you waiting for? Like, yeah, we proposed this. Anyway, let's talk about Russia again. What the? No, get fucking fight. Get in the trenches. Argue. Go to work. Bring up facts about the minimum wage. Did you know the minimum wage was worth more in 1968 than it is now? If the minimum wage kept up with inflation from 1968, it'd be over $10 an hour right now. So technically, the dollar value of the minimum wage in 1968 was higher than it is right now. If minimum wage growth kept up with the rate of growth among the top 1%, it'd be $22 an hour right now. If it kept up with productivity, it'd be about $21 an hour right now. Why are you not pointing these facts out? You can work a full-time job in America and not make enough money to survive. Let me repeat that. Because the Republicans say, oh, parasites, moochers, lazy. If you make the minimum wage, just lazy. No, no, no. You can work a full-time job but not make enough money to survive and get bare necessities. Why are the Democrats not, hey, the Republicans are against you surviving if you work full-time? How do you not portray that as the most vicious, brutal, anti-family thing? Like, oh, they want to talk about being for the family, the traditional family. Why do you want the traditional family to live in poverty if they work full-time? That's it. Frame it something. Attack, attack, attack. You're proposing something that's good, but where are you? Go fight for it. Do none of you know what the fuck you're doing? None of you do know. I say that like I'm surprised, like I'm asking a question. I know the answer. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. If you focus on real issues, if you push for real issues, you fucking win. You're not pushing for real issues. You're not fighting for real issues. Now, finally, because Bernie Sanders is fucking dragging you there as you kick and scream, you're starting to do some progressive things, but then you do it and you're like, I'm going to go eat a sandwich and talk about Russia. Come on, guys. Get out there, get in the trenches, and fight, and then you win. And what happens is you're going to win. If you fight on these issues, you win. You get a progressive wave, and then you have a supermajority, and you get to do whatever you want to do. But, that's where it gets tricky, because a lot of these Democrats who are like, yeah, $15 minimum wage, a lot of them are corporate Democrats who are only saying that because they know that it isn't actually going to get done because they don't have the numbers right now. So it's a cynical ploy. But guess what? That's where Justice Democrat steps in, because we're going to run people, support people, and people are going to win who are Justice Democrats who actually want to get these progressive priorities across the country. So go to justicedemocrats.com, sign your name in support of the movement, because we're not only going to have people who pay lip service to the right ideas, we have people who are actually going to fight for them, and when push comes to shove, vote for them. Okay, next. Guess what? It's time. Time to talk about news. Bloomberg has a new report about some big changes coming for the news business. Uh-oh. Google rewrites its powerful search rankings to bury fake news. The plan is to remove misleading or offensive pages from top results. News searches are now given special treatment like finance and health. So let's see what they have to say here. Google isn't planning to rid fake news from its search results, but it's trying to purge it from the top. The Alphabet Inc. company is making a rare, sweeping change to the algorithm behind its powerful search engine to demote misleading, false, and offensive articles online. Google is also setting new rules encouraging its raters, the 10,000-plus staff that assesses search results, to flag web pages that host hoaxes, conspiracy theories, and what the company calls low-quality content. That's not going to be problematic. The moves follow months after criticism of Google and Facebook for hosting misleading information, particularly tied to the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Oh, boy. Google executives claimed the type of web pages categorized in this bucket are relatively small, which is a reason why the search giant hadn't addressed the issue before. Earlier this month, the company introduced a tool allowing publishers to fact-check articles in its search rankings. The newer changes apply to the secretive core algorithm behind all Google search rankings. The alterations were devised in an internal group called Project OWL, started in December. For years, the company gave more care to making sure there wasn't misleading information in response to two types of queries, those for personal health and finance. Now it's adding news as a third category. Until recently, we thought we didn't need to do that for news because news typically comes from high authority pages. Wow, is that fucking Orwellian? Okay, so what are we talking about here? We're talking about regulating news. So it's almost like you have what one would call a ministry of truth to determine that which is true or false. Yeah, I can't even count the number of downsides to that. Who's going to watch the watchmen? So those 10,000 people you have for Google who are like, oh, these are the people who check everything. They don't have opinions and feelings and biases. If anything, they have even more than the people who are doing the shows because at least we come as advertised. And they don't even do it for a living. By the way, low quality content. What's low quality? You know, we've been told by people, hey, your set, it's a nice set and everything, but it's not like TV level quality. You know what I'm saying? So is that enough to say, okay, boom, everything secular talk. Put it to the bottom, put it to the bottom, put it to the bottom. Get rid of it. By the way, Google owns YouTube. So, and if you search almost anything political, what comes up right now? We're going to come up in some of the top results because we have, what, about 10,000 videos on YouTube. So you type in Hillary Clinton, you type whatever you type in, there's going to be a secular talk video within the first two pages. Why? Because we're really fucking popular, and we cover so much shit. But they're making, well, come on, man. Look, we got to control it. We got to, low quality and offensive content. Offensive! What's offensive? I curse a lot. Is that offensive? Does that mean I shouldn't show up in search results because I curse? By the way, they talk about, until recently, we didn't need to do that for news because news typically comes from high authority pages. Well, let me give you a little scenario here, guys. CNBC, high authority place, right? CNBC, in the lead up to the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession, over 98%. In fact, there was only one guy who I think dissented. Virtually all of their hosts and guests said, ah, there's no problem with the economy. It's going to keep growing. This isn't a bubble. There's no real estate bubble. I don't know what you're talking about. I'd invest in real estate right now. I think Bear Stearns is doing well. Oh, my God, Bear Stearns just collapsed and went bankrupt and the economy is imploding. So if you're really being objective, so, okay, let's see who actually does fake news. Holy shit, that entire network was based on fake news, telling you everything's fine with the economy and then it collapsed. Then they do the dodge. Well, nobody could have seen it coming. Yes, people could have. I saw it fucking coming. I saw it coming. Peter Schiff, the libertarian economist, saw it coming. Bill Maher saw it coming. He did a fucking New Rules segment in like 06 or 07 about how there's a real estate bubble and it's going to burst and a fucking cardboard box goes for $1 million in L.A. So what the – yes, people saw it coming, but no. It's who has money, who has power, who's part of the corporatocracy. They're the ones who are going to get favored in the search rankings. CNN, their bullshit, are going to get favored in the search rankings. Guys, Don Lemon was on air speculating when the Malaysian plane went missing, which, by the way, thank you, CNN, for covering that for like 2 weeks straight to the exclusion of everything else, because that's that important. He speculated maybe the plane went into a black hole. Does that get Don Lemon and CNN lowered in the rankings? Does it? Oh, no, it doesn't, right? CNN, what do you mean? CNN's fine. What about when Wolf Blitzer was on air? And Rand Paul said, maybe we shouldn't arm Saudi Arabia because they're using these weapons to kill civilians, including children in Yemen. And then Wolf Blitzer said, yeah, but what about jobs and what about the profit margin of the military-industrial complex? Does that get them lowered? That's pretty offensive to me. Hey, I care more about corporate profits than I do about dead children and weapons we sell to a terrorist regime in Saudi Arabia, Salafist state. Is that going to get CNN lowered? Is it going to get Rachel Maddow and MSNBC lowered when Rachel Maddow spent more time on Russia conspiracies than every other issue combined? That's literal. Healthcare, the economy, taxes, foreign policy, all less than Russia conspiracies. Are they going to go fake news? We got to lower on the thing. No. What about Fox News and that endless parade of idiocy they spew on a daily basis? Are they going to get lowered? No. So what's going to happen? Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, CNBC, the nightly news, Brian Williams. Our weapons are beautiful. I love watching them go to kill things. Fareed Zakaria. You know, Donald Trump became president tonight because he bombed Syria. Are they going to get lowered? No. Who's going to get lowered? Me, Jimmy Dore, The Humanist Report, David Pakman, The Benjamin Dixon Show, TYT. Look, this is not just a partisan thing either. It's not like, oh, only progressive media. Anything that is not giant corporate media is going to get demoted. So this is Orwell 101. Under the guise of fake news, they say, well, we also mean not just fake news, but conspiracy stuff too. And offensive stuff. You know, if you're low quality content, sorry, you're not even going to show up in the search engine. You're not going to be prioritized. You're going to be way off there at the bottom. They can't beat us in the realm of ideas. They can't beat us when it comes to grassroots popularity. So they cheat. This is cheating. Don't put them in the search engine. They're kicking our ass. You think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding. Guys, the same thing happened with our funds. The way YouTube works, we do content. You guys watch. There's a giant firewall and a buffer between me and the independent content creators and the advertisers. So I never speak to an advertiser ever. So brilliant system. The more you watch, the better content I put out, the more you watch, the more we get paid because we basically get paid by views, and I never speak to advertisers, so there's no selling out. Guess what? They decided, we fucking pull the rug out from underneath you, and at first, just totally get rid of your funding, demonetize everything. Now we're off the blacklist. They'd say there's no YouTube blacklist. There is a YouTube blacklist. We're off the blacklist, but we still have a giant cut to our pay, as does all your other favorite shows. So they do that, and then look at that. Lo and behold, they roll out YouTube TV at the same time, and they shift the funding to TV. YouTube TV is just TV. Go look at who made a deal with them. It's all mostly old media legacy outlets. So people leave TV to come to new media and independent media and online and YouTube. And then YouTube goes, that's nice, let's defund the people who you like who are kicking ass in the free market and let's give that money right back to the TV people. They leapfrog us, jack the funding, and now they're trying to get us out of the fucking search results. Come on, man. Come the fuck on. Soon as the country is going to hell with more war, more deregulation, more tax cuts for the rich, we go further down the path of oligarchy and corporatocracy, more money in politics, boom. Cut the legs out from underneath free and independent media, new media, who were starting to have a giant impact. We need you now more than ever. I need you guys. I need you. Patreon.com/secular talk. Hey, our Amazon link. By the way, all this stuff I'm talking about, right below. Patreon.com/secular talk. Amazon, you know, however you can help. And we have people. Look, we actually are popular, so we have like a lot of people that listen to us, unlike CNN, who we actually get more views in the key demo than them most of the time, which is fucking crazy because they have billions and billions of dollars and we got dick, but we do better than them. But since we have a lot of people, all we need is a little bit from each person, and then everything can function perfectly smoothly and we do just fine. So, you know, $2 a month means the world. If you could just do $2 a month. You want to go absolutely nuts, go crazy, and give $5 or $7 a month, be my guest. But all I ask is just a cup of coffee a month, which works out to like a cent per video. And again, it ain't just me. So if you love this show, that's one thing. But if you also love the other shows I mentioned, by all means, they have Patreons too. Go donate to them because we're all hurting right now. And I can assure you it's only going to get worse. Because when I read stuff like this, they're really trying to eliminate us. They know they can't just shut everything down because that's too obvious. But they got to try in slick ways. Hey, let's demonetize them all at once. Oh, what? That was too far? Oh, my God. Everybody's flipping out. Okay, we'll take them off the blacklist, but still cut their pay massively. But now also on top of that, let's make it so they don't even show up well in the search results. It's an all-out war on us. That war is crystal clear. We have to fight back. Okay. I got to squeeze in. I don't have time, man. I'm going to save one for tomorrow. All right, let me do one more here. I'll do one more. The Guardian has some news for us coming out of China. A certain region or province, I don't know how to pronounce that, which is why I'm avoiding it, has banned Muslim names. So here's what they say. Officials in the western region of, should I give it a shot? I'll give it a shot. Xinjiang? I tried. Home to roughly half of China's 23 million Muslims, have released a list of banned baby names amid an ongoing crackdown on religion, according to a report by U.S. funded Radio Free Asia. Names such as Islam, Quran, Saddam, and Mecca, as well as references to the star and crescent moon symbol, are all unacceptable to the ruling Communist Party, and children with those names will be denied household registration, a crucial document that grants access to social services, healthcare, and education. Jesus. A full list of names has not yet been published, and it is unclear exactly what qualifies as a religious name. China blames religious extremists for a slew of violent incidents in recent years that have left hundreds dead. It has launched a series of crackdowns, home to the Muslim Uyghur minority, and one of the most militarized regions in the country. Yeah, so that's just stupid. Like, so let's grant them the fact that, oh, in this Muslim minority population, there's been some attacks that have come from that population. That's probably true. But that means that you ban Muslim baby names? Like, that's not going to fucking fix anything. Like, how do you think that won't fix fucking anything at all? And again, it goes without saying that most of the Muslim minority population in China are not terrorists, but you're going to go ahead and ban all religious names because there are some religious terrorists in the region. Look, guys, this is the difference here. What China shows us, it's the difference between state-enforced atheism, so state-sanctioned atheism, versus secularism. So the beauty of secularism is the government is non-religious. So you can't have Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, whatever, come into the government and then force their ideology on the people. So the government just checks out of the religion game. They say, look, we're non-religious. We don't make rules based on religion. We're just out of that game completely. And the beauty of secularism is in a secular country, the government's not religious, and they don't pass religious laws, but you get to be whatever the fuck you want to be. I mean, you could be an atheist, you could be an agnostic, you could be a Buddhist, a Christian, a Hindu, a Mormon, a Scientologist. You could be any of the 4,000 fucking religions that exist on the planet right now. And it's totally fine. It's totally allowed. Now, that's secularism. It's basically the government is non-religious, and outside of that, you have the freedom to do whatever you want to do, be whatever you be, as long as you don't take away the rights of somebody else. In China, it's in name a communist country. It's really like a state capitalist country because they're ruthlessly capitalist over there. But the government is a one-party government and they're an authoritarian regime. And what they do is they go further. It's not like, hey, we're secular, but you get to be whatever you want to be. This is, state-enforced irreligiosity. Hey, there's a problem in that community, so now we're going to ban all religious names in that community. Well, that's authoritarianism, and that's anti-freedom, and it's easy to be like myself. I'm against all the religions in that I don't think they're true, and I'll argue against them and say, hey, you are wrong, but I'm not going to ban you from being religious. I'm not going to ban you from naming your kid something religious, because that's authoritarianism, and that crosses a line. You can argue for a secular position and an irreligious position without becoming authoritarian and saying, and I will now ban you from doing X, Y, or Z. Again, the only thing you should ban is when somebody goes to take away the rights of somebody else. In this case, it's the government taking away the rights of the individuals to name their kids what they want to name them. Okay. Out of time, guys. I love you, and we will see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Everybody enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Mwah. Peace.